I've always been a believer that your vets start to play in December. So it's December for us, and he's going to start playing from here on out.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by BasketballMonster.com. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. We had a very busy day in the NBA. There were only 10 games, so you have busier days in terms of games played, but things happening all over the place, lineup changes, injuries in-game, things that really need us to pay attention to. So it was a lot to absorb on this Wednesday of NBA basketball. And then we've got five games for Thursday to preview. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start with the monstrous line of the night, and it goes to Big Azza Gordon. Big Az dropped 40 points. He hit 6 triples and had 15 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, and a block. He was 13 of 23 from the field and 8 of 11 from the free throw line as the Magic got a big win over the Oklahoma City Thunder. Az is the 21st ranked player so far this season, averaging 18.5, 8.5, with 2.3 triples, 1.1 steals, and 0.9 blocks, so he's almost in the triple one category. But it's been his shooting which has been the massive surprise this season. He is up from 29% from 3 last year to 44% this year. He's seen an over 10% rise in his true shooting percentage. His free throws are up from 72 to 77% as well as getting to the rim more often. It turns out that he's playing his more natural position. He can get more rebounds, he can block more shots, he can shoot a high percentage, but that three-point shot is really, really elevating him to that extra level. Now, let's get into a bit of a discussion on the Basketball Monster player comment section about Gordon. I'm almost 100% confident that this field goal or this three-point percentage is going to come back down. Now, it's not going to come back down to the levels of sub 30%. I think he's made significant improvements in that area, but I think that some regression is going to come for Gordo. In fact, over the last 2 weeks, his three-point shooting has only been at 36%. So we've seen a level of regression, obviously not in today's game where he went off shooting 6 of 12. But prior to that, he had had some poor games from three. In fact, there was a stretch there where he only hit 4 threes in 4 games, and that came on quite a lot of attempts, 17, 18, 22 attempts across 4 games, and he hit just 4 threes. So that's the sort of regression that is a possibility for Az, and I think that he's a comfortable top 50 guy and probably a top 40 player, but around that top 20, it's going to require him maintaining extraordinarily high levels of three-point shooting. His current three-point percentage would have placed him fourth in the NBA last season for all players who played over 1,000 minutes and attempted at least 2 threes per game. The only players ahead of him were Kyle Korver, Blue Swimmer Alan Crabb, and Jingling Joe Ingles, if he maintained this current three-point percentage. That's why I don't believe that he will be able to continue that, but it's been an impressive season from Gordo. We thought that he was a potential breakout guy last year, really honed in on him as a breakout guy this year, and it has come true in his fourth season here in the NBA, really starting to look like a significant star level player is Big Az Gordon. The waiver wire line of the night, you know I'm going to get questions about this guy, so I'm going to answer them all now. It is Gorgui Dieng. He had 19, 6, and 5 with 4 steals and a 3. He was 8 of 13 from the field, and he hit both of his free throws. But no Nemanja Bjelica, and Karl Anthony Towns played just 20 minutes due to foul trouble, as often happens with Towns when he has to go up against DeMarcus Cousins. So to answer the question, is there anything to see here? The answer is no, there is not, because Taj Gibson still played 38 minutes in this game. It wasn't like Dieng was cutting into Gibson's minutes, and it's not like Towns is all of a sudden going to play 20 minutes per night, and Bjelica is not going to be out for the rest of the season. So these things are going to come back to normal, and he's going to go back to a 15-minute, 16-minute a night role. And while this is great, you're really good, and no one's saying that he forgot how to play. It's just the opportunity is not there for Gorgui Dieng. it's just nowhere near to be seen. In fact, his per minute production is actually up this season from where it was last year. He averages more points per 36, more rebounds per 36, three times as many triples per 36, more steals per game, more assists per game. The only thing that's down for him this season are his blocks. He is not a 12-team league guy. He is not a 14-team league guy. He is not a 16-team league guy. Unless Towns gets hurt or Bielitsa remains out long-term or Taj Gibson gets hurt. But for now, it'd be just like holding on to any sort of other backup handcuff player. It's just not going to be worthwhile because I don't see Tom Thibodeau going, oh man, even this one game where Bielitsa and Towns weren't playing, Jeng put up big numbers, so therefore let's change our entire rotation. So I don't see it. I am going to get the questions. I got them already. Is there anything to see here? No, there's not. There's two very clear explanations as to why he got these large minutes. And in the next game, in the game prior to this, with Bielitsa out, he played 15 minutes and scored 1 point. So again, it's not even a case of Bielitsa being out means that Jeng's going to play 30 minutes a night, because it just won't necessarily be the case. 15 minutes in the previous game, 20 in the game before that. So nothing overly exciting to see there for Jeng, but it is a really good performance. If for some reason you still held on to him in any of your leagues, I'm a massive Gorgui Jeng fan, and I think that he should have been playing ahead of Taj Gibson, but I'm not coaching the Minnesota Timberwolves. So it doesn't matter necessarily what I think in terms of how they should run their rotations. The young gun of the night goes to Brandon Ingram of the Los Angeles Lakers. Ingram had a career-high 32 points. He hit two triples. He had five rebounds, three assists, but it's the three steals, the two blocks. He just went over the Richie Beno there by getting that third steal. 12 of 21 from the field, 6 of 7 from the line, which is almost the most impressive part of this from Ingram, considering he is a 66% shooter from the line this season and was a 62% guy last season. So this was really encouraging. He's still going to have inconsistencies. I don't think there's anyone that doubts that. But this is a string now of 7 consecutive double-figure scoring games. Started off with a 26-11 game against the Sixers on the 15th of November, and he hasn't dipped under 12 points since then. He's had significant games with assists. He's been really, really good. And in fact, over the last 2 weeks, he's the 72nd ranked player. So he has been obviously a much improved player. The efficiency is well up over that time, 49% from the field, 36% from three, and shooting 69% from the line.
Giggity!
And the defensive stuff's been really impressive as well. 1.3 blocks and 0.7 steals. The steals, maybe not so much, but those block numbers with that length, really impressive stuff from Ingram, and starting to deliver on the promise that saw the Lakers take him with a number 2 pick overall. Again, there will be some consistency issues, but this is a significant step in the right direction for Ingram, who looked piss poor in preseason and didn't start the season off that well, but has looked much, much better of late. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Not often you get back-to-back duds of the night. The iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, 6, 2, and 3. He had the triple zero with 3 of 12 shooting. This is just a horrendous two-game stretch for Dragic. He still is the 72nd ranked player, but over the last 2 weeks, he's down to 29 minutes a game in 7 games, 113th rank. If you can buy really low on Dragic after these 2 games, absolutely do it. The Heat were just smashed in both of these games. One game against the Cavs, the first one, Dragic was limited with foul trouble. In this one, it was just a smashing. So we didn't get to see the full minute load. I'm not really all that concerned about this at all. Otherwise, I wouldn't be considering him a buy low guy. Let's just chalk this up to a horrendous two-game patch for him. And things should turn around, hopefully, as early as the next game. Let's now talk about these games. We'll go through them, of course, in a little bit more detail, as we always do in this portion of the show. The first game, if you don't want to hear a rant, probably want to fast forward 2-3 minutes, because the Phoenix Suns lost to the Detroit Pistons, and yet again, they made another change to their starting lineup. This is the third change to the starting lineup in the past 3 games. They've got 3 centers, right? Tyson Chandler, Greggy Monroe, Alex Len. In each of the last 3 games, each of those centers has had a DNP CD. We've had 3 separate starters at power forward, with Greg Monroe starting 1 game, Dragan Bender starting 1 game, and then him being benched for Marquise Chris to re-enter as the starting power forward. Absolutely nothing makes sense with this team. And you get the feeling, and I could be wrong here, and you know, no one wants to hear me talk about revenge games again, but I get the feeling that Jay Triano is doing everything he can to really, really go the old rusty trombone on his players. Josh Jackson, you're from Detroit. You can play 30 minutes in this game. Greg Monroe, you used to play against Detroit. How about you get the start at center and play 25 minutes? Oh, you're against the Bucks? Well, we're going to play you 30 minutes in that game. It feels just like 100% pandering. And yeah, you get the feeling Earl Watson was a bit of a locker room panderer as well. But this feels exactly what Triano is doing. I could be way off base with that. But just those three little things that make no sense in the scheme of anything. Look, Josh Jackson took 19 shots in this game. The next highest was Monroe with 10. Devin Booker took 8 shots. That screams of, I don't give a shit what we do on the court. I just want Josh Jackson to shoot as many times as possible because he's back in his hometown of Detroit. That's what that screams up. And that is horrendous, horrendous coaching. If that is the case, and I'm not saying it is, but if that is the case, it is disgusting. The lineup decisions are disgusting. The rotational decisions are disgusting. Now, I can totally get behind having Tyson Chandler as a DNP CD, but I can almost 100% guarantee you that won't be the case next game. It'll probably go back to Alex Len being a DNP CD, and you might have Monroe starting again next to Chandler. Who knows with this team? As long as they stick with a consistent plan, I want to see more from Alex Len, from them, more consistency in what they do with him. Start Bender. Start Len. Start Bender and Chris together, for God's sake. Oh, I don't care what you do, but none of this chopping and changing every single game. Do you own Monroe in 12-team leagues? Maybe. Do you own Alex Len? Maybe. Who knows? Who knows how any of this is going to play out? They can both be owned. So if you sent me a screenshot of your roster and Len was on it, I'd say, all right. If you sent me a screenshot of your roster and Monroe was on it, I'd go, all right. But if you also sent me a screenshot of your waiver wire and said Monroe and Len are both available, I need to grab them, I'd say you probably don't, because we just have zero idea, A, who's going to play on a given night and how many minutes they're going to play and how anything is going to roll with this team. And even the point guard position, the same Fred Hoiberg special. You know, Tyler Ulis played 31 minutes last game, 23 in this one. Mike James only played 16 minutes. We saw just bananas lineups and rotations. This team is mired in a sense of mediocrity. There is no plan. There is no anything. There is no player development. It is just a bunch of shitful decisions after shitful decisions, and there is nothing consistent, and it does nothing for the development of players. In saying that, yeah, Josh Jackson was all right. 20 points, 7 rebounds, and 3 steals. He's not going to become a 12-team league player because he's not going to take double the amount of shots of every other player on the team in any other game this season. I wouldn't guess that would be the case. Bender went from starting and played 17 minutes in a bench role while Chris had 10 and 4 with 2 steals and a block in his 23 minutes. It is really tough to own Chris. You don't want to own Bender in 12s or 14-team leagues because he's not a fantasy producer. Chris is the guy that if you got 28 a night, you'd be interested. But I have zero confidence in that. Jared Dudley went from a DMP CD to playing 22 minutes in an absolute smashing. It was like they were 10 points down in about 2 minutes in this game. But Jared Dudley played 22 minutes on a night when, okay, we're getting Chandler out of the rotation, so let's see if we can go young. Nah, let's not. Let's put Jared Dudley in for 22 minutes. As I said, Dudley, ripper bloke, top bloke, great teammate. Don't need 22 minutes out of him under any circumstance. Just horrendous, horrendous coaching from Triano, and this organization needs a swift kick up the ass. The Detroit Pistons, well, they didn't need to really extend themselves. Reggie Jackson scored 23 with 5 assists in just 22 minutes. Drummond had 13, 7, and 7 and hit all 3 of his free throws. The interesting thing, I think, from the Pistons' point of view, oh, well, let's talk Toby Harris, who had 19 and 7 in just 27 minutes, but Luke Kennard was in very early. This is not just a blowout special for Kennard. He played in the first quarter, 26 minutes, and had 12, 2, and 6. I've said this multiple times. He is not a white guy three-point shooter. Yes, he's white. Yes, he can hit threes, but he is more than that. He can rebound the ball, he can play defense, and he can handle the ball. He had 6 assists in this game, so probably not the best time to try and acquire him in Dynasty after this game, but he has more value than you might anticipate. His game is much different to other white three-point shooters. He's not Mirza Teletovic. He's not J.J. Redick. Now, J.J. Redick's really good, but he doesn't... Kennard has much more to his game. He's not Doug McDirt. Like, he's nowhere near Doug McDirt. He has got abilities to do many other things on the court, and he is a name to watch for sure. Boban Marjanovic played 5 minutes, so there is that. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Orlando Magic... Russ Westbrook owners will be pretty happy. 37, 11, and 5. 5 steals and 7 triples. The free throw shooting wasn't ideal in this one. That's still a monster, monster performance from Russ, and he is really starting to assert himself on this team and back on the fantasy rankings. Paulie George recovered from his illness, had 22, 5, and 5, while Mallow had 16 and 7. That's the big names. We've seen Terry Ferguson play minutes over both Josh Huestis and Alex Abrines in the past two games, and Billy Donovan said that's because of defense. So have a look at your Terry Fergusons, but don't add him anywhere. He had two rebounds in 20 minutes. Almost went the full Tone Snell there, but did have the two boards. Not much to see with him. Pat Patterson got 7 minutes. Steve Adams only played 28. It's a, apart from those three blokes, it's a pretty ugly looking box score from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Onto the Magic, Lord Alfred Payton, 31 minutes, 19-5-6 with 4 steals and a block, 8 of 10 from the field. He has been, again, really good lately. I never understand the benchings for DJ Augustin. I never understand the talk that Augustin needs to play ahead of him. I think he's really good, and if he's in on any waiver wires, which surely he isn't, he needs to be owned. Evan Fournier had 16 points. His peripheral numbers have dropped with Payton back, and he does suffer in terms of overall production. I checked this out yesterday, that his FanDuel or official NBA points scored per minute drops by 0.4 from 0.83 to 0.79, I think the numbers were, when he shares the court with Alfred or when he's on the court without Alfred. So it is a bit of a drop-off in his production because he's not handling the ball as much. The concerns I had with John Simmons starting, this is what I was concerned about. 33 minutes for Simo, 6-0-2. When your value is almost entirely predicated on your extraordinarily high usage and high efficiency, when you join a starting five, when you're going to be behind Gordon, you're going to be behind Fournier, and you're going to be behind Vucevic, your usage is going to drop. So he had 9% usage, and he was a 24% guy, 25% guy for the season. This is why, even though the minutes increased, I didn't believe that he was going to be a must-own 12-team league guy. We've had two games. One was pretty good. One was not so good. But when the points aren't there, he just offers nothing else in the other categories. The fact that Terry Ross hurt his knee in this one might give Simo some extra minutes, but he still played 33 minutes in this one. So it wasn't like he was lacking for minutes. Aaron Aflalo took on those Terry Ross minutes in the second half, but he is as washed as any player in the NBA at this point. Washington and Philadelphia, this was just disgustingly ugly to watch. I hate free throws. I hate them with a passion. Not Hacker free throws. I hate every single free throw, and I wish they would find a way to eliminate them entirely out of the game. They are just the most boring thing that you could possibly introduce into any sort of game, and the Wizards went full Hacker on Ben Simmons in this one. They did get back into the game, but it's a horrendous strategy. It's an eyesore on the game, and free throws in general are just absolutely brutal. Let's talk about the Wizards, though. Timmy Frazier was shitful once again, 4-3-3 in 19 minutes and outplayed by Tomas Satoransky for the second consecutive game. Satoransky played 29 minutes and had 12-2-8. I firmly believe that Satoransky is the better player, and I've been saying this for quite a long time. Does Scott Brooks believe me now? Not that he gives any credence to anything I say, but is his thinking in line with mine now? And that's something that is going to be important, because if Satoransky is going to play 27 minutes a night, then you want to look at him in 14 team leagues and probably 12. As for Tim Frazier, my confidence in him getting 30 minutes a night with Johnny Wall out is entirely evaporated. I don't think that will happen, and he is nowhere near a must-own 12-team league guy now. Wall's got like another week and a bit to go, so it's only a short-term solution anyway, and he's been terrible in that time. And I believe that Satoransky should be the permanent backup point guard. Don't know if that will happen. My concerns with Marcin Gortat are also coming to the fore. 20 minutes for the second consecutive night, 6-2, with Yan Mihinmi playing a much larger role. And Kelly Oubre is really impacting Markieff Morris. Oubre had 22-7-4 with a 1-1-1. And if you wanted to drop, say, Frazier and grab Oubre in a 12, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Because I think that Oubre, with the way that he's playing, and them going small with Oubre and Porter at the 3-4, is really limiting what Markieff Morris can do. And it's working decently well for Oubre. So I think he's got some value there. As for Markieff, I reckon he's in the drop zone. 7 points in 17 minutes. Gortat should also be pretty close to that drop zone, even though it wasn't long ago that he was putting up good numbers, but this was always on the cards, in my opinion. Jody Meeks with Bradley Beal in the locker room in the first half with a bruised face. Meeks played 26 minutes, had 21-4 with 3 triples, but Beal returned in the second half and had 21 points of his own in just 23 minutes. Onto the Sixers. As for Simmons, that free throw percentage is atrocious. 52% on 29 attempts, so goodbye to your free throw percentage. If you own him in a head-to-head league, in a roto league, you would have tumbled down the standings in that category just based on this one game alone. That is a ridiculous amount of free throws. Embiid took 18 himself. There was 64 free throws that the Sixers took. Just disgusting. As for Simmons, 31-18-4, 2 steals and 2 blocks. In a points league, you absolutely love that sort of production, and for DFS, that was superb. Embiid had 25 and 14 with 4 assists and 4 blocks, and you look at it and you go, that's fine. And that's just stupid. That's how good he is. And Dario Saric was also really good. High shooting, 67%, enabled him to get 24 and 8 with a steal and a 3, and the return of Markelle Fultz will have an impact on him, but for now, he does have 12-team league value. He's getting the starts, he's playing the minutes, and I'm surprised at how well him and Simmons on the court together is meshing. I wasn't certain that it was going to be the case, but Saric is a top 100 guy over the past 2 weeks, and he should be able to maintain that at least until Fultz returns. Bob Cove's shooting is not there, but he had 12 boards, he had 2 steals, which is totally fine. And TJ McConnell hurt his shoulder. They said it was a contusion, but he is already ruled out for Thursday's action, and he is going to have an MRI on that shoulder. So if he is out, that boosts Jared Bayless's value. Bayless played 26 minutes here and had 14 points with 4 assists, and he would become a 14-team league sort of a player. No Rashawn Holmes. He was a DNP CD. Now that he's going to get an opportunity on Thursday with Embiid out, but if for some reason you're still owning him in 12-team leagues or 14-team leagues, I just don't see why you would. He's clearly the third-string guy. Now, he could come out and have a big game tomorrow. Doesn't mean shit, I don't think, anyway. I don't think that Brett Brown's going to see one game and go, you know what, we just have to really change things and play him 24 a night. It's just not going to happen. I cannot see that being the case. Could happen. Don't see it, though. The Charlotte Hornets and the Toronto Raptors. No Kemba Walker. Michael Carter-Williams made the start. 32 minutes for Carter-Williams. This is a very MCW line. 9-6-5 on 1-of-10 shooting, but weirdly hit all 7 of his free throws. So it's not a horrendous sort of performance. You could look to add him. Kemba's likely going to be out in the Hornets next game as well. So some of those peripheral numbers will be fine for Carter-Williams, but obviously there's no long-term value there. With him moving into a starting role, Malik Monk moved into the backup point guard role. 16 minutes for Monk, 9-2-4 with 3 triples, but he would likely go back to a DNP CD. In the past 2 games, Frank the Tank Kaminsky has overtaken Marvin Williams, not as a starter, but in playing more minutes. Marvin played 20, Frank played 28 and had 18 and 7. This was a situation that I thought might be possible in the offseason, that Kaminsky would overtake Williams. Williams has struggled all season, and you shouldn't be owning him in 12s. You probably shouldn't be only owning Frank either. Jez Lamb, 18-3-3, a steal, a block, 2 triples, super efficient. He is one of the most improved players in the NBA, and you still do need to own him in 12-team leagues. We know Steve Clifford loves defense. He loves Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, but Lamb has clearly outperformed Kidd-Gilchrist this season, and a 29 minutes versus 28 minutes split is something that may not be all that crazy. Now, they did need his scoring with Walker out, so he did get a few extra minutes here, Lamb. But the problem is his ceiling is capped just by the presence of Batum and Kidd-Gilchrist. That is really going to cap his ceiling, but he has been a sensational player for the Hornets this season. Onto the Raptors, I hope you bought low on Kyle Lowry. 36-5-6, 8 triples, perfect 4-of-4 from the line. He is back. Well, DeMar DeRozan played through his knee issue. 34-6 on 64% shooting is really, really impressive. Well, Freddie VanVleet, in only 19 minutes, he dished 9 assists. He's more of a deeper league guy. The Pascal Siakam big minutes train ended. 18 minutes for Siakam, 4-6 with a block. He wasn't a 12-team league guy, and he probably wasn't an absolute must-own 14-team league guy. But these sort of big men rotations are going to be a consistent problem for predicting what the Raptors are going to do. Bebo Nogueira left this one with a calf strain, so that might introduce a level of predictability. Valanciunas played 22 minutes. Serge Ibaka played 30 minutes and had 8-8, but nothing overly exciting. I would still own Ibaka, and in most cases, I would still own Valanciunas because he had 12-7, but the minutes just aren't going to be high for him really at any point. With CJ Miles back, Norm Powell predictably minutes dropped. 17 minutes for Norm, 10-4, and that's what I talk about. The amount of people, like, man, do I drop Joshy Richardson to grab Norm Powell? He looks like he's on the way up, and you've got to look, why was he on the way up? Because CJ Miles was out, so he played 26 a night. CJ Miles comes back, he plays 17. They're the sort of things you need to look at before making hasty ad drops. I like Powell a lot, but I just don't see the minutes with the Jedi starting, OG Anunoby playing 19, and CJ coming in and playing his 17 minutes. It is going to be a real squeeze on minutes there for Storm and Norman Powell. The Miami Heat and the New York Knicks. Bam Adebayo made the start for Hassan Whiteside, but we'll talk about Whiteside first. Eric Spoelstra came out and said, look, it's just a schedule thing. It's a back-to-back. He would have played normally any other time. He's fine. MRI's clean, blah, blah, blah. It's just a schedule thing. Yeah, about 20 minutes later, Whiteside comes out. No, it's really sore. It's really serious. I need the Heat to get to the bottom of what is causing this because it's a real serious problem. So which one is it? I don't know. Whiteside's got a touch of the ship blokes about him. So there is that portion to pay attention to. But even if Whiteside doesn't miss any more time, I think his minutes are going to be less than 30. And you play 25, 26 for a bit of time. That's going to introduce Bam Adebayo into the rotation. Now, he played 31 minutes here and had 9-5 with 2 steals. But the center who is more productive is Kelly Olynyk. He had 18-5 with 3 triples and a block. With so much murkiness, though, it's hard to reckon. Look, Adebayo's not a 12-team league guy, I don't think, even if Whiteside's out for a prolonged period of time. Olynyk in 27 minutes a game would be, but it's hard to rely upon that from him. Joshy Richardson didn't hit the shots, but took a lot of them. 14 here, 13-3-1, 3 steals, 1 block, 2 triples. This is why you drafted him. This is exactly why you drafted him, and if he is on the wire, I would personally grab him. Justice Winslow's minutes just keep going down every single game. 17 minutes here, 5-5, and he has no 12-team appeal, while Waiters had 10-1-8 with a triple one, and as usual, was decidedly inefficient. Jimmy Johnson did not make us proud. He only played 19 minutes due to foul trouble, and that also enabled Adebayo and Olynyk to play those increased minutes. So don't look at those numbers or go, oh, Bam played 31 minutes, man, I've got to get on him. He's not a 12-team ad, in my opinion. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, got 27 minutes, only scored 3 points. It was a triple, but he is a, he's still an elite 3-point streamer. On to the Knicks.
Oh, no!
That's pretty much what everyone said when Kristaps Porzingis went down 2 minutes into the game. His ankle bent at an angle that ankles shouldn't bend at. Porzingis said he felt his ankle bone touch the floor, which is just a horrifying sort of thought when you're upright. Somehow, fine. No x-rays were negative. He was available to return. But by the time they made that determination, the Knicks were up by like 25 points. And they said, well, don't worry about it. We don't need you to go out there. And he's not going to have an MRI. And they think he's going to be right for the Knicks' next game on Saturday, which is just absolutely astonishing. Michael Beasley came in. He started the second half, but he only played 19 minutes, with the majority of the minutes going to Doug McDirt, who did jack shit as usual, 12 points in 29 minutes, and Lance Thomas played 21 minutes. So if Porzingis happened to miss time, it's going to be like one game, it appears, and yeah, maybe you stream in Bees, maybe you're adding McDirt, but nothing that's really overly exciting to do. Bill Hernangómez, a decent performance, 8-8 in 9 minutes with 2 blocks for him, while Koch had 9-7 in 14 minutes, but there's nothing to do with Hernangómez. You're not adding him outside of very deep leagues. While Enes Kanter returned, only 25 minutes for Kanter because he just legitimately didn't need to play anymore, 22-14, and he has been a sensation for this team. Timmy Hardaway only the 12 points in 29 minutes, but this team was so far up that minutes were just spread all over the place. Another strong game from Courtney Lee. He needs to be owned, I think, in all 12-team leagues. Just continuing to put up consistent numbers. 17-5-2 with 3 steals and a block is a very, very good performance from Big Court. The Indiana Pacers and the Houston Rockets. Vic Oladipo, another monster. 19-3-5 with 5 steals and 2 blocks. It turns out that his offensive uninvolvement last season and the Thunder's scheme caused him to be a much worse defender, because he was a guy that was a, you know, legit 2 steals, 1 block sort of player, and you know, just was nowhere near that last season. That, along with his dip in free throw percentage, really did hamper his value. All that has come back together this year, and he has been awesome. Miles Turner was also pretty strong, 15-10 with 4 blocks. I think he's going to be fine. Second half of the season, don't have too much worry. Domantas Sabonis, only 20 minutes here, 4-7, while Thaddeus Young had 23-4. This is the problem with Sabonis. He doesn't have guaranteed large minutes. I would still hold him in a lot of cases, but it depends on who else was on the wire. Lance Stephenson also coming on strong, 25 minutes for Lancey, 11-4-4, not a must-own. In 14-team leagues, yes, I would. In a 12-teamer, you can stream him if you need some wing-type players who give assists, but I don't feel sensationally confident. Wasn't a great night from Daz Collison either, 5-6-5 in his 32 minutes. On to the Rockets, Jim Harden, 29-8-10. Yep, that's just pretty standard from him. While Clint Capella, another monster, 22-13 with 2 steals. And Chrissy Paul only played the 30 minutes in a pretty comfortable victory. 13-6-7 for Paul. At least the shots went in, 63%, and he looks like he's going to be all right. It was also a good game from Ryan Anderson, who had 19-9, hit 5 triples, but he is at best a 3-point streamer. Eric Gordon, he is getting pretty close to that drop zone. 10 points, 3 assists in 26 minutes. It doesn't look like he's going to be able to get 30 minutes a night. The free throw attempts are down, the assists will be down, The shooting has fallen way off as well, very similar to what happened to him last season, except this year it's coming like 2 months earlier. Keep an eye on it, but I wouldn't be holding on to him with everything I've got and say, man, he's going to turn it. He's going to turn it. Remember what he did in November? Because there are obviously factors involved as to how he was able to do that to begin this season, where he was one of the number one sell high guys. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the New Orleans Pelicans. No Jeff Teague again.
My name is Jeff.
And things function better without him. Tyus Jones is good. I think Tyus Jones is a starting level NBA point guard. Is he better than Jeff Teague in a vacuum? Probably not. Is he better fit than Jeff Teague on this team? I would say almost definitely yes. Because as I said a couple of days ago, Teague just has absolutely no idea how to mesh with these other players, has no ability to change his game whatsoever to defer to the better players, and Tom Thibodeau obviously doesn't know how to run an offense enough to change that. Now, with Jones in there, who knows his place, knows when to defer, knows to play defense, knows to play spot-up threes, it's so much better. Andrew Wiggins looked fantastic, 28-8-5. Jim Butler, 19-4-3. Townsy still had a double-double, 11-10 in his 21 minutes, while Jones had 16-4-6 with 4 steals, absolute dynamo on that end, with 2 threes. And the questions are coming in, man, what do I do with Jones? What do I do with Jones? He's earned more playing time. Yes, he has. Doesn't mean he gets it, though, because I don't see a situation where Thibodeau comes in and then goes, all right, Jeff, 24 minutes apiece now. You cannot convince me that that is even close to a possibility. He will go back, Tyus Jones, this is, to playing sub 20 minutes a night. Teague will play his 32 to 35 a night. Even though the Tyus Jones fit makes so much more sense, it doesn't mean that it will happen. Teague will come back 30 plus minutes. Jones will go back to being a deep league guy. Now, I do believe in his dynasty value, Tyus. I think he's a starting caliber player, but I don't know how that comes to fruition unless Thibodeau just says, well, this just works better. It just works better with Tyus in here. Jeff, you should be playing 20 minutes a night and we have 28 for Tyus. I just think the likelihood of that happening is extraordinarily low. Taj had 10-10 in his 38 minutes. The minutes has continued to be gigantic. On to the Pelicans, another strong Drew Holiday game. 27-1-5 with 5 triples, 2 steals and a block. He is putting up some big, big numbers. And Tone Davis got ejected. Still had 17-5, but he got ejected due to 2 techs, while Boog had 17-10-6. With a triple one. Rajon Rondo remains terrible. 3-1-7 in 27 minutes for Rondo. I love getting into arguments with Derrick Rose fans and Rajon Rondo fans, which happened to me yesterday, because I asked the question, when was the last time that Rondo was good? And everyone points at Sacramento, led the league in assists. Doesn't mean he's good. And, you know, getting into arguments saying, look, he was assist hunting. Oh, assist hunting is a good thing. It means you're looking for better shots. No, that's not at all what assist hunting means. Rondo would pass up any sort of shot he could get as long as he could find a play that would give him an assist. It bogged down the offense. He gave absolutely no care whatsoever to the defensive end. Well, he averaged 2 steals a game. Yeah, I know. Doesn't mean he's a good defender. He was an absolutely horrific defender. He was one of the worst defenders. He didn't give a single shit about that team or anything apart from trying to pad his assist numbers and get steals. They are the only things that he cared about on that Sacramento team. He might have led the league in assists. I do not care. He was not good in that season, and he hasn't been good. In fact, his team was 3.3 points better per 100 possessions when he was on the bench with Daz Collison in over him. He hasn't been good for about 6 years. The minutes limit is still happening, but 3 points with 7 assists. At this point, he's an assist specialist, and that's really all he is, and that can have value. But he's getting real close to that drop zone to me, because I just don't think that he should be playing 30 minutes a night on this team. I'd rather have Jameer Nelson in there. I'd rather have more minutes from Etwan Moore, from Tone Allen, from Darius Miller, and let Drew run things for a bit. I just don't think Rondo should be playing 30 minutes a night. But maybe I'm just way too anti-Rondo. The Brooklyn Nets and the Dallas Mavericks, no Blue Swimmer, no Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, but Damari Carroll returned, and there's a lot of players who are in line for this most improved player. Damari Carroll's in there too, 22-7, 4 triples and an assist. He's been sensational this year and is a clear must-own guy, while Tyler Zeller was strong. 9-7-4 in 22 minutes as a starting center, 2 steals for Zeller, and even when Rondae comes back and Booker is available to start at center, I think they'll keep Tyler Zeller in that role, and that makes him like a 16-18 team league sort of a player. Jumpin' Joe Harris made another start, 11-4-2, just a deeper league player, while Spencer Dinwiddie, 19-3-6, was strong. but the efficiency was down. And Caris LeVert, this is why I like Caris LeVert. 13, 6, and 5, assist numbers, hit two triples, got a steal. The shooting wasn't great, but I like him. He is a 14-team league guy to me, but with Crabbe and Hollis Jefferson out, it did enable him to play those extra minutes. I still think that he should be playing 28 a night regardless, and reducing Jumpin' Joe Harris's minutes. The sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick. It wasn't a great night from him. 3-3-2 in 17 minutes. If everyone was healthy, Crabbe, Russell, Lynn, he is not a part of the rotation. But of course, Russell's not coming back for a while and Lynn not coming back at all. On to the Dallas Mavericks, the pencil Harrison Barnes, 17-8-6 with two steals. Good to see him getting the two steals and the six assists. They're not really normally part of his game. But I want to touch a little bit here on Maxi Kleber, who played 23 minutes, has been starting now for a week or so. 16-7 with two triples and a block. He's a guy that I was pretty intrigued with his overseas numbers. And I grabbed him in a couple of the Red Rock 30 leagues and just stashed him to see how it was going to work out. And you know, I didn't expect him to be starting in November, but here we are, putting up some okay numbers. Now, when Seth Curry returns, he'll likely go back to the bench. But I feel like, he has definitely overtaken Nerlens Noel in the rotation, and he should be able to maintain some sort of a rotational role for the rest of the season. Dirk had 10-7. Wes Matthews had 8-3-2, while Dennis Smith only 10-2-3. Not the greatest night from him. This was not a great night from the Dallas Mavericks in general. A good night from Dwight Powell, though, 14-7 with a triple one. His minutes and his production fluctuates pretty wildly, so I wouldn't be looking at him outside of the very, very deep leagues. The first game in the JB Bickerstaff interim era for the Memphis Grizzlies ended up with a loss to the San Antonio Spurs. Bickerstaff did come out and say we're expecting some changes in the starting lineup, but it's really hard to know what that means given that Mario Chalmers and Chandler Parsons, two players who'd been starting previously, were injured. Does it mean that Tyreke Evans becomes the full-time starting point guard? Maybe. Does it mean that Chandler Parsons moves back to the bench? Unlikely. I think we'll see Parsons back in the next game, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Evans replace Chalmers in that starting lineup. But it doesn't really matter in terms of Evans' value. But what it then does do is it increases the likelihood that Ben McLemore gets minutes over Mario Chalmers. So that is something to pay attention to. Jim Ennis and Andy Harrison had been either out of the rotation or completely buried. But both of those guys stepped up for the new coach. 15-5 for Jim in 23 minutes with two steals, while Andy had 13-6 with two triples in 24 minutes. But Parsons, Chalmers, and then eventually Conley returning, which is looking like it'll be after Christmas. With those guys returning, then they'll likely go back out of the rotation. Gasol had 10-6-7, not a great night, while McLemore in his first start had 10-3 with two triples and a steal. Again, just a deeper league, along with Brooksy, Dylan Brooks, who made another start. Tyreke was good, 22-3-5, but we're pretty much just coming to expect that from him now. Speaking of good, LaMarcus Aldridge, 41 points in 37 minutes with 3 triples, 6 rebounds and a block. He is the highest of sell-high candidates that you can get. I have absolutely zero faith that he can maintain this level of production once Kawhi Leonard returns. Some people will believe it because they'll think back to Portland and they'll go, you know what, he was a top 20 player. And he is a top 20 player this season. I don't believe that'll be the case because what's going to happen? He took 14.6 shots per game last year. He's at 17.3 this year. So we're talking 3 shots extra per game. He is going to lose those shots when Kawhi Leonard comes back. And we know that he is, best way of putting it? Not the most diplomatic, not the most, I don't know what the right word is without me being overly insulting. He's not the greatest teammate. We'll put it that way. So I don't imagine he's going to be overly happy with going back to being the number 2 option. And that will influence a lot of his other areas of production. So he is averaging 23-8. Sensational. Like, just killing it. He's the 10th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. Amazing stuff. I don't see that continuing. And so if you can get a top 20 guy, if you can get a top 30 guy back for Aldridge, I would consider it. But again, remember when you are selling high, sell high. Don't sell for a guy that they might end up being the same. Like, I can almost guarantee you that Aldridge will not be a top 20 guy when this season is done. So if you can get another top 20 player back, do it. If you could get Miles Turner back for Aldridge, I would consider it. But that's not as clear cut as it may seem. As Gordon, I'd consider that as well. Just see how you can go about doing that. But I do not think that LaMarcus is going to be able to keep up this level of production. Neither will Kyle Anderson, who had 10-4-2 with 4 steals. But there's a legitimate argument you can make that Anderson will be ahead of Rudy Gay in the rotation once Kawhi returns. And there's no way that Rudy Gay should be owned in 63% of leagues. He is not a 12-team league guy, not even close. Kyle Anderson is clearly more of a 12-team league guy at the moment, but that will change. Tone Parker, 18 minutes, 10-2-5. He's going to play 18 minutes for the next 4 or 5 games. Not really a fantasy option outside of 14 to 16 team leagues. Powell had 4 and 6 against his brother in 29 minutes. Well, DeJounte Murray only played the 5 minutes. That's going to be a pretty regular occurrence for him. With the return of, who is it? Tone Parker, that's the guy. On to the Golden State Warriors and the LA Lakers. This went to overtime. Durant and Curry were back. Curry was struggling with his right hand, made a little left-handed shots. He had 28, 5, and 7. Durant had 29, 7, and 5. And Draymond had 15, 11, and 9 with 4 steals. Just really run-of-the-mill type performances for these guys. Klay Thompson did hurt his ankle late. We'll check on that to see how that goes down. 23 and 2 for Klay with 4 triples. And not a lot else happening on the bench. Pat McCaw went from 30-plus minutes to 8 minutes. At least he did stay in the rotation with Uncle P playing as well, while Andre Iguodala played 35 minutes and Jordan Bell saw 12 minutes of action and filled it up, as he always does. You give this guy 30 minutes a night, he is a top 50 fantasy guy, potentially. He had 6-4 with 2 steals and a block. I really, really like Jordan Bell. It's just going to take you a fair bit of time to get that to happen. On the Lakers, Lonzo Ball, 15-2-10 with 3 triples, 42% shooting, and he is looking a little bit better with his shot. For fantasy, his numbers have been pretty okay. The field goal percentage has been fairly disastrous, but over the last week, he's a top 70 player, averaging 8 boards, 8 assists, 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals, and half a block, and he's up to 35% from the field, and he's hitting 32% of his threes, which is a marked improvement from what we've seen from him for the season so far. So he is still a guy that clearly has to be owned, even though he is on some waiver wires. Jordy Clarkson's big year continued, 21-6-8 for Clarko in 36 minutes. And with Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, out, Julius Randle had 20 points in 31 minutes. Only the 4 boards for Randle. I think that the guy who loses the most value from the return of Nance is Brooke Lopez, who played only 17 minutes, and he is really getting close to the drop zone, Lopez. I think it's going to be hard for him to get 25 a night if everyone's healthy. That's sort of the way it's feeling. Larry Nance didn't score, but had 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, and a block. And if you're owning Larry Nance for scoring, you're looking in the wrong spot. Those defensive numbers, that's really where his numbers come from. And that's he brought it again in this game. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had 21-7, but not a lot else happening in his box score there. All right, that caps off all of the action from Wednesday. Yep, that's all of Wednesday's games done. We have got a 5-game Thursday, so a little bit more of a busier Thursday than what we're used to. So I'm going to come back in a sec and talk about the DFS action for all those games. Before we do, we've got a song from Visca, and the song is called Far Behind, and then I'll be back to talk DFS. To cry, I don't need it. Waking up tonight, 4 years needed. Even though I'm bruised and bleeding, the day is dark, it seems. No one will see me. Thinking back before, my heart was beating. Everything I had lost its meaning, and still I go. Alright guys, we're back. Let's talk perfect DFS on FanDuel. Russ Westbrook 65.7 and Tyus Jones 40.8. Wigo had 46.1 and Jordy Clarkson had 39.2. Kelly Oubre 39.4 and Brando Ingram 50.5. As Gordon had 78, Googie Jeng 43.7 and Joel Embiid at 59.8 for a total of 463.2 points. That cost $59,600. On DraftKings, Benny Simmons had 66, Tyus Jones 38.5, As Gordon 78.75, Wigo 48, Jeng 41.5, Lowry 55.25, Ingram 44.25, and Oubre 39.75 for a total of $412 points. And that cost $50,000 dues. 5 games for DFS. We'll break all of them down to hopefully get you guys into the money. We will start with the first game of the night, and that is the Cleveland Cavaliers traveling to the Atlanta Hawks. The Cavs are favored by 6.5, and the total is 215.5. Sad news. Yes, The Undertaker has a stress reaction in his leg. That's Dwayne Dedman for you uninitiated. And shout out to Greg Ehrenberg for getting the Undertaker nickname put up on the official DraftKings site today in the write-up about Dwayne Dedman. So shout out to you, Greg, for getting the Undertaker out there to a bigger audience. He's out for the next 3 to 6 weeks. So that means we're firing up our Baptists. John Collins, if you're in a seasonal league, he surely has to be owned now. The problem is the Atlanta Hawks have been one of the toughest teams to predict in terms of rotation. We've got Ersan Ilyasova back. Luke Babbitt is going to be back in this game. Miles Plumlee is back in action, and then we're going to have Mike Muscala hopefully back soon as well. So it's going to be quite a confusing situation in that front court, but the Baptists should be getting close to 30 minutes on non-blowout nights. The problem is this is a blowout night, potentially, but in this one, at least Muscala has been ruled out. So outside of Miles Plumlee, they're going to, hopefully they try to give John Collins as many minutes as possible in this one. For Cleveland, Iman Shumpert is questionable with his knee issue. Jose Calderon's going to start anyway, and Shumpert will play limited minutes, and not too much to be too concerned about. At point guard, point guards against the Cavs, still working all right. Den Schroeder, 7,400. Yep, in on him. We're not looking at Jose Calderon, really. At shooting guard, Kent Bazemore, 5,100. Wings against the Cavs has also been a pretty interesting one. Now, I'm not really 100% sold on Baze as a cash play, but he has done extraordinarily well against the Cavs in the past. He's got the opportunity here, so I am okay with considering him. Ballinelli at 4,800 is just a GPP guy, so is the plumber, J.R. Smith. Dwayne Wade at $6,000. With the blowout potential here, I think that it's hard to rely upon him at that salary, while Kyle Korver at $3,700 always has that ability to pop off for 25 to 30 points, which makes him a GPP option. At small forward, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince is at $5,400. I think he's more of a tournament guy here formerly. He has struggled in his past few games, only averaging 21 over the last five, but he does have 30-point upside here, so he is worth a squeeze, while LeBron James is at $12,000.
LeBron James.
Pretty expensive for LeBron. Depends on who else you're fitting into your lineup, but he might be a tournament-only type of guy. Depends on how the lineup is. Again, with five games on, these high-priced players, that might mean you have to put a lot of low-floor guys around him in cash, and that doesn't necessarily pay the bills. At power forward, the Baptist is at 5,900. Fouls are a problem. Blowout minutes are a problem. But at 5,900, I feel pretty good about getting him in there. He clearly has 45 to 50 point upside. So if you're going to lean one way, to be tournaments, but I do think that he is a cash play. He's going to be highly owned in cash anyway. Ersan Ilyasova is an interesting one. He's played 20 plus minutes the last two games. He's at 3,500. With Undertaker out, with Muscala out, he could find himself at 20 minutes again, and he's got the ability to drop a 20-pointer. So at 3,500, he is worth a squeeze. Jay Crowder is not at 3,900, although that's really cheap. He had 0.4 points in the last game, Crowder. He has just been putrid. As for Luki Babbitt, 3,500, much like Kyle Korver, a guy that can go out there and hit threes, and with the front court pretty bare with the injuries to Dedman and Muscala, Babbitt's got the ability to play 25 or 26 minutes and make him a GPP guy at center. Love is at 7,800. A good opportunity for him to go off again. I think he's a cash option. He also has some tournament upside, while Channing Frye at 3,700. I'm not really too keen on using Chan. Over on DraftKings, I've been said that I say the DraftKings picks too quickly. So if you listen to this podcast on sped up pace, which I can't recommend listening to podcasts on higher speeds enough. I listen to all my podcasts on 1.8 speeds. That's probably too high to get to initially. I started on 1.3, went to 1.5, and now up to 1.8. And if I ever stumble across a podcast on regular one time speed, I just think these people don't actually speak this slow in real life, do they? And it just sounds really, really weird. So for the DraftKings pick, I will slow it down in case you've sped up the podcast, as you should, to get through more hashtag content. I'll say this a little bit slower than I have been. For tournaments, Kevin Love, $8,000, and Kyle Korver, 3,600. For cash, you've got LeBron at 11.7. I like him more for cash on DraftKings. You've got the Baptist at 55. You've got Bellinelli at 42. You've got formerly Torian Prince at 4,800. And Dennis Schroeder is at 7,500. They are some decent cash plays in this game for the Hawks against the Cavs. Let's move on now to the next one. It is the Philadelphia 76ers taking on the Boston Celtics. A back-to-back for the Sixers. They are the only team that's on a back-to-back on this Thursday slate. We know that TJ McConnell has been ruled out with his shoulder already, and Joel Embiid is out resting. So you're going to have an opportunity for Amir Johnson to get a start and for Rashawn Holmes to get some more minutes, as well as Dario Saric and Jared Bayless getting a bump with McConnell ruled out. At point guard, Bayless is at 3,700. He's really just a tournament type of guy, but he is that sort of player who can pop off for a 30-pointer, and that makes him interesting with McConnell ruled out. I like Kyrie at 8,200 as more of a GPP guy, but he's not horrendous to look at in cash. While Rozier at 3,800, no thanks, not with all the Celtics guys healthy. It's hard to rely upon him to get enough minutes. At shooting guard, JJ Redick at 5,100. With Embiid out, usage has to go to some of these other players, and Redick will be one of those. I feel okay about him in cash. He's always a better tournament than cash guy, but in this situation, he does have some cash ability. While Marcus Smart has been on fire lately, but at 6,200, it's just a little bit too reliant upon him hitting his shots to get to that level of value. At small forward, Bob Covers at 6,200, just a tournament guy, hasn't really hit his shots in the last two games, and the Celtics have been very, very good at defending opposition small forwards. I would still look at him as a tournament player, while Jaylen Brown at 5,900 in the same boat, I wouldn't feel comfortable with him in cash. At power forward, Amir Johnson, 3,600. Love this for Amir. He should start. He's got clear 30-point upside, so he is a real strong option to put at power forward. Jason Tatum at 51 is a significant drop in his price. The last time he played the Sixers, he had 31 points. I'm in on him for cash, and Saric at 5,500 with Embiid out, with McConnell out. 5,500 for Saric, this should be a 30-point type experience for him, so I am in on that. So Amir, Tatum, and Saric, all three of these guys have cash potential on FanDuel, but you're only going to be able to play two of them. So work out how you want to do it. Depends on how much cash you've got around. If you've got the cash, you take Saric and Tatum. If you don't, you take Johnson and Tatum, or you could fit Johnson and Saric. But those three are really three strong power forward options. If you want to spend up, Benny Simmons is at 9,900. He'll absorb usage. He's going to have 50-point upside. Well, not even 50-point upside. He's going to have pretty close to 50-point floor in this one. So I do like Ben in this game. Marcus Morris at 46, probably the only power forward in this one that I don't like. At center, Rashawn Holmes at 3,500. Well, he just hasn't played at all. He does have the opportunity here, and that makes him a tournament guy, but I wouldn't feel strong in cash. Well, Al Horford's not going to have to play against Joel Embiid, but Amir Johnson's quite a good defender. At 7,300 for Al, I reckon you can probably do better at the center position, but he is you know, a decently solid player to take a look at. Over on DraftKings, four tournaments, Kyrie is at 84, Bob Cub is at 62, and Al Horford at 68 is probably a little bit more appealing on DraftKings. And then you got Redick at 5,000. For cash, Amir at 38 in a revenge game. Dario Saric at 49. Absolutely love Saric at 4,900. Benny Simmons at 93. Love the shit out of that as well. That is massive. While Marcus Smart at 5,200. That is a significant difference between his price on FanDuel, and that makes him way more appealing on DraftKings than what he is over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game. We're going to talk the Chicago Bulls and the Denver Nuggets, the Gary Harris Bowl. The Nuggets are favored by 11 points, and the total is 208.5 points. Mason Plumlee is questionable for the Nuggets, and David Nwaba is questionable for the Bulls. He's been out quite a while with that ankle sprain. Nikola Mirotic is also getting pretty close to a return for the Bulls, and I think when Mirotic comes back, you'll see Chris Felizio out of the rotation, Portis and Markkanen playing the backup center minutes, and Mirotic coming in, but it's not going to be in enough minutes to really threaten to be a 12-team league player, because Markkanen is going to continue to start barring injury. At point guard, Chrissy Dunn's at 6,500. He had a monster against the Suns. The Nuggets aren't that much better defensively, but I wouldn't be locking him in as my cash point guard at that sort of a salary. Jaren Grant's at 4,400. I didn't think the upside's all that high there. While the Blue Arrow at 5,100. I really like him against the Bulls here. They're horrendous. He's going to have an opportunity, and hopefully he can get those minutes up. Manny Moutier hasn't been doing much, averaging just 8 points across the last three and 11 across his last five, so he is a fade for me. At shooting guard, Farton Will Barton had 14 points in the last one and only averages 25 across his last five. Somehow his production and minutes have gone down without Paul Millsap. That won't always be the case, and this is a very good matchup, but I would only look at him as a tournament sort of a player. While Gaz Harris at 6,100, I think that's not bad for cash. I think 30 points for Gaz is a pretty reasonable estimation of what he would do. While Justin Holiday at $6,000, with the way that his shot goes, he is more of a tournament player. Wancho at 4,000 for the small forwards. We assume that he will start again with Wilson Chandler already ruled out. He had 22 points in the last one, but I wouldn't lock him in for cash because they could just go with more minutes for Barton. While the hammer, Denzel Valentine at 6,300, too high for cash, but he does have that 40-point upside, which makes him an interesting tournament player. At power forward, Ken Faried at 4,000. Again, we just don't have the consistency in minutes for Ken. He is a tournament type of a player. Well, Lowry Markkanen at 6,800, it's just too high for me to get involved. Same with Punch Bob Shiploke at 4,300. At center, Robin Lopez, 5,000. Mason Plumlee, 38. Nikola Jokic, 9,500 in on this one. Great matchup for Jokic. I think that he will come out and want to be more aggressive. He only scored 27 points, FanDuel points in that last game, 7 real life points. He's at 9,500. He is a strong option against a good, what's the opposite of good? Shithouse, against a shithouse Bulls team. And Nikola Jokic,
pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
Yeah, he is. On to DraftKings for tournaments. Justin Holiday, 5,800. Chrissy Dunn, 6,000. The Hammer, 5,800. Ken Faried, 4,300. And the Blue Arrow at 5,000. And for cash, I like Gaz Harris at 56 a lot on DraftKings. I like Jokic at 9,100 a lot. And Wancho at 3,700. That's hard to go past over on DraftKings. The next game. Milwaukee and Portland. I want to take a second again to talk about Jason Kidd, because that quote at the start of the show was from Jason Kidd, saying now that Jason Terry is going to be in the rotation every night, because now it's December, that's when the veterans start to play. It is the most batshit insane article I've read with quotes from Kidd. Nothing makes sense in it. I've always said it in my head that veterans play in December. What are you talking about? Once your tank runs to empty, you can't refill it. No, that's not how petrol tanks work. Even if we're using a petrol tank analogy for a human body, that's not how human body's energy reserves work either. If you get tired one day, it doesn't mean you're just tired for the rest of your life. That's not how any of this works. If Jason Terry gets tired, you can give him 2 games off in January and he can come back and actually refill his tank. So everything you're saying, Jason, is absolutely 100% incorrect. If you lose energy, it can be restored. That is what sleeping is for. That is what eating is for. That is what rest days are for. This just makes no sense. And then in that same article, he went on to say that December is the time we play the vets, because when we get to December, the young players are more settled and they're more ready for the marathon. So we wait for the young guys to get better. We wait for the young guys to get more used to it, more used to the grind, and then we take them out and play the veterans. If anybody can make sense of that logic, please let me know. Matt Velasquez had the article. You can go check. I retweeted it today. It makes no sense.
Well, once the young players are ready to go, once they've developed a tolerance to the grind, once they've really got in there and settled themselves down, and they're attuned to things mentally, and they're ready to go, we're just going to play a million-year-old Jason Terry instead.
Huh? So, what this means for seasonal leagues and DFS, Terry's going to play every night. We saw last game that DeAndre Liggins played ahead of Malcolm Brogdon. So are we going to see Liggins and Terry now play ahead of Brogdon and impact Tone Snell's minutes? Someone's going to have to miss out. What happens when Dally comes back? We're just going to run an 8-man guard rotation. This guy is a shitful coach and none of his decisions ever make any sense. None. We are going to have Terry every night. We are going to have Liggins every night. We're going to have Brogdon limited. We're going to have Dally. Who knows what the bloody hell's going on? It makes no sense. Nothing makes sense from this guy. All right, let's talk about the game now. The Blazers are favored by 3 and the total is 202 points. We don't think that Matthew Dellavedova is going to play. He's listed as questionable. I don't expect Dally to be ready to go. At point guard, Eric Bledsoe is at 7,500. He's been crushing it, averaging 38 over his last 5. I do think that he's an okay play here. The Blazers defense has been pretty good. against opposition point guards. But I think Bledsoe's in play on a five-game slate. Well, Dame Lillard at 9,100. Well, this is a tough matchup for opposition point guards, but Lillard has done well against the Bucks in the past. If you're looking for someone to use at that high price and you don't want to take Jokic and you don't want to go up for LeBron or Giannis, yeah, Lillard's a fine guy to use there. Shabazz Napier's minutes have been plummeting, so I don't think he's really worth too much of a look. At shooting guard, I like CJ at 6,700. He's been a little bit down on form, but I think that he's primed for a big one. While Chrissy Middleton at 6,600, I think he is a tournament guy. Pat Connaughton will likely start, will likely play 25+. He is at 4,100. If he hits those threes, he can bring that value back, but I just don't trust his floor enough. Tone Snell at 3,800 is clearly only a GPP guy. And then you've got DeAndre Liggins and Jason Terry, who are going to come in and siphon minutes away from players who deserve them. At small forward, Yanni's at 11,800. Probably more of a GPP guy for Yanni, but again, if you don't want to spend up for LeBron, it's $200 less for Yanni, and I probably feel a little bit more confident in Antetokounmpo's performance level against a more competitive team than I do with LeBron against the Atlanta Hawks. Evan Turner, no chance. Mo Harkless, man, if he's out of the rotation, I wouldn't be shocked. At power forward, the Muppet John Henson, 5,400. Yusuf Nurkic can be a problem, and that would give me some pause for the Muppet. I'd leave him for more of a tournament type of a guy. Al-Farouq Aminu is going to return. He's at $5,000. He'll play off the bench. And this, again, goes to seasonal league players. If he's in your IR spot, don't activate him. Absolutely no need, because I think that Aminu is not going to be a 12-team league player this season with Vonleh back. He was good at the start of the season, but that was without Vonleh. Vonleh was the starter with Aminu around last season and played decent minutes, and Vonleh's been really strong this year and is a good pairing next to Nurkic. So don't think that Aminu is necessarily going to be a must-own player. He's definitely not someone you want to use here. As for Vonleh at 4,300, we just don't know the impact on his minutes. He's not a high DFS scoring guy anyway, so not much to see. Nurkic at 7,400. Centers have abused the Bucks pretty much all season, so I like Nurkic at 7,400. While Thon McCurr at 35, that's just not going to happen. Over on DraftKings for tournaments, Middleton 6,400 and Lillard at 85. And for cash, I like Yanni at 11,100. The Muppet, John Henson, 4,700. Bledsoe, 68. McCollum, 67. Connaughton at 3,400 is super strong, while Yusuf Nurkic at 6,700 is also a really, really good option to use over on DraftKings. We've got one game left, and it's the Utah Jazz and the LA Clippers. Rocket Rodney Hood and Joel Neto are both listed as questionable for the Jazz. Rocket missed the last game with ankle problems. If he misses, Alec Burks gets a bump. Ravishing Rick Rubio gets a bump. If both of these guys are out, Don Mitchell should get an usage bump. Well, that didn't happen for him last game. We saw Jonas Jerebko absorb a larger portion of the usage, as well as Derek Favors. At point guard, Austin Rivers at 6,000. Well, someone's going to have to do something for this Clippers team. So I think Rivers at 6,000 is a decent bet. He's averaged 33 across his last three games, and efficiency doesn't really come into it in this sort of a setting. And that's one of his biggest drawbacks in standard leagues for season-long stuff. Ravishing Rick at 5,500. With the uncertainty with Neto and Rocket, 5,500 seems like a good bet to me to use him. As for Neto, Thornwell and Evans, No interest. At shooting guard, Rockets at 5,900. If we hear he's playing, I think that he is worth a GPP look against a depleted backcourt for the Clippers. And then you've got Don Mitchell at 68 as a tournament guy, and Lou Williams is up to $8,000. He could get there. I think that's more of a tournament look for Lou, though. He is averaging 41 across his last three and is doing pretty much everything offensively for this team. At small forward, Wes Johnson's at 4,700, probably more of a tournament sort of a guy. He can put up those block numbers, which can elevate his production to be a 30-point type guy, but just not feeling that 100%. Well, Sammy Decker at 38 is the likely starter at power forward. He could easily have a 25-pointer, which is good value at 3,800. Jingle and Joe at 56, probably a little bit too high. Tarbo at 37 doesn't excite me. At power forward, Montrez the Table Harrell, 4,400. He's got an opportunity to get some minutes instead of Sammy Decker, so he would be a tournament guy. But FanDuel has bumped his salary up significantly to 4,400. So that takes a little bit of the appeal away. Dez Favors at 7,400 has been putting up big numbers. 39-point average across his last five. I think if he's going up against Sam Decker, DeAndre Jordan, I guess. Sorry, not Decker. 7,400 is worth a look for Favors. As for Jerebko, 4,000. He had 31 in the last game. He'd be more of a tournament player to me, but not a strong one. At center, DeAndre Jordan, 7,400. He's not going to be able to take on a massive extra load offensively. I think he is okay to use in cash, but clearly not the pick of the bunch. While Will Reed at 3,500, I don't really think too much changes for him with the Blake Griffin injury. On DraftKings, some tournament players, Ravishing Rick at 57, The Table, Montrezl Harrell, 35, and Sammy Decker at 35. That's probably even leaning more towards cash for Decker. Wes Johnson's at 44. He is a cash option. Lou Williams at 73 is a strong cash play, while Austin Rivers at 55 is also a very strong cash play over on DraftKings. Let's go ahead and talk about some action on Yahoo for tournaments. Dunn, The Hammer, The Blue Arrow, The Muppet, Ken Faried, Sammy Decker, The Table, Kyle Korver, Ersan Ilyasova, Jonas Jerebko. They're all some tournament picks. For cash, I like Pat Connaughton. I like Marco Bellinelli, Juancho, Amir Johnson, Wes Johnson, Austin Rivers, Gaz Harris, The Baptist.
Nice, Gary!
I didn't think I'd played that yet. DeAndre Jordan, Dennis Schroeder, Yusuf Nurkic, and Nikola Jokic. On Moneyball tournaments, Kyrie, Farton Will Barton, Chrissy Dunn, The Hammer, The Blue Arrow, Justin Holiday, Ken Faried, Marco Bellinelli, Rashawn Holmes, The Table. And for cash, you've got Connaughton, Decker, Juancho, Amir, Tatum, Wes Johnson, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, Austin Rivers, Gaz Harris, CJ McCollum, Eric Bledsoe, Lou Williams, Dennis Schroeder, Yusuf Nurkic, Jokic, and Yanni Adetokounmpo. And to wrap it up with draft stars, LeBron for tournaments, Lauri Markkanen, Austin Rivers, The Blue Arrow, Chrissy Dunn, Ken Faried, The Muppet, Sammy Decker, The Table, Ersan Ilyasova, and Jonas Jerebko. And for cash, we've got Connaughton, we've got Juancho, Wes Johnson, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, The Hammer, Gaz Harris, The Baptist, CJ McCollum, Schroeder, Nurkic, Lou Will, Adetokounmpo, and rounding it out, once again, with Nikola Jokic. Actually, I said him again. Yanni Adetokounmpo. That's who I meant to say. Guys, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, whether it's on YouTube, where you can subscribe, give a thumbs up and leave a comment, or an Apple podcast where you can go in and leave a 5-star review. You can also do it on Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, or Stitcher. Make sure you are subscribing and checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. Check me out on basketballmonster.com and get into some arguments with me in the comments section. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jason Kidd.